The Anton Savage Show
with Kearys.ie
on News Talk.
Ursula Savage is with me, political commentator Gary Murphy, professor of politics at DCU, and Valerie Cox, journalist and author. And normally, Valerie, when we look at industrial relations matters, it tends to be people who are at the lower end of the pay scale fighting against what are seen as the big monolithic corporates. In this instance, we have individuals who are earning total packages nudging 300,000 euro. What does that mean for public and popular support? Who's coming out on top of this, as you see?
Well, I mean, the pilots are not just going to get the support, because the ordinary person who's on a much lower pay scale, who's never going to compete with the sort of money they're earning. I mean, I think we had 250,000 a year up there for the senior captains. And yes, it takes a few years to get there. But I mean, most people who are following a pay scale, teachers, journalists, whatever, they're not going to get anywhere near that. And I would argue that the pilots have an amazing lifestyle. I mean, they have so many perks. They have so much time off that really, it's very, very difficult to be sympathetic towards this dispute. Now, the other thing was, of course, that, and this is in the Sunday Times in the editorial, they talk about Aer Lingus failing to reverse the changes after COVID. The IALPA president, Captain Mark Tighe, complained that the pay offer didn't reflect the sacrifices they'd made during the pandemic to help Aer Lingus survive and didn't reverse them. But, you know, that happened to everybody. There were so many businesses closed during COVID who weren't making a whole load of money, and they certainly never got back. So I don't know what their complaint is here, because I think there's still the public perception is, and it's not even just a perception. If you compare the rates of TDs, MEPs, the president, the Taoiseach, these guys are on a great salary.
And of course, what IALPA will say, and we'll be talking to Captain Mark Tighe in a while, what they will undoubtedly say is Aer Lingus profits have increased by, they believe, 400% in recent years. And therefore, they're saying, look, there is a giant pool of cash here that is created on our backs because of our flexibility and our willingness to be available for different rosters. We should therefore get a cut.
That is created by a lot of other people. And most of these are the people who are going to suffer in this. We're talking about the cabin crew. We're talking about the ground staff. They are going to lose money because they're not going to be working, and they're going to lose their summer bonuses.
Gary Murphy.
Yeah, there's an interesting piece. Well, the front page of the Sunday Indo talks about concerns by the ground staff and the cabin crew, as Valerie has just mentioned. And I think for most people, a pay demand of, you know, 25%, a quarter, would seem to be a lot. And there's a very good piece, I think, by Owen Curry in the Business Post. Next 7 days could well define industrial relations at Aer Lingus for many years to come. But he sets out the sort of context, which is that Aer Lingus is part of a much bigger group now, IAG, and he has got a great line, which if I could just read out here. IAG regards Aer Lingus as one of its strongest brands, but one of its weakest earners. Its third green-haired child, not too small to matter, but not big enough to destabilise the operation. And of course, IALPA is part of Forza. So there are bigger issues at play here. Now, and I think for most people looking in, but they might say, well, you know, doesn't have the state have a mechanism? And it does. The Labour Court, WRC, and IALPA has been unhappy with what has come out of that already. So,
and of course, their logic being that the reason they need such a step change in terms of pay is that it has been so long since there was an increase, and when you compound interest,
indeed,
inflation over that period,
just to finish, Anton, I do think the pilots do risk losing the cooperation of their fellow workers in Aer Lingus. And it's like all operations. I mean, like in the university sector, professors, you know, sort of at the top, we only exist really because of all the people underneath us who, you know, set the timetables and fix the lecture rooms and whatever. And if you lose your work colleagues in a strike, I think that's a bad look.
Ursula, when you talk to people about this, what's the sense that you're getting of the mood? Which way do you think public opinion is breaking at this point?
I don't think I've ever experienced an oncoming industrial action where people are actually so torn as to whether or not they want to side with the employer or actually they want to back those that are on strike. People whose natural instinct is very much to support the workers and to support those who are going on strike are actually finding this one very, very challenging because of the extent of the demands, and also I think because of the approach that IALPA are taking. The maximum damage approach really is not only affecting their employers' profits, and you know, that's sort of, you know, people would say, well, you know, you're making plenty of profit, you'll see this through, you'll be all right. But they really are hitting people in their own pockets and they're hitting people's holidays and they're destroying these experiences that people have been looking forward for a year. And like Conor said, they're just in the piece before this. You know, it really is the anticipation of a holiday that really is important to people, and they're looking for, and people need that holiday when they're looking forward to it. They will, between losing the support of their colleagues and the ground staff, like think about the customer facing staff in Aer Lingus this week, what they'll be going through. They're not going to see any benefit to this, whatever way it works out.
Well, it's been interesting to see some of the Aer Lingus statements referring to the quotes 12.5% pay rise that everybody else agreed to driving that wedge. Yeah. Just looking at the text as you're talking about that polarisation of opinion, it's reflected in what we're getting. Give them a decent pay rise immediately and end this nonsense where everyone loses. Next one, IALPA are a disgrace. Holding the travelling public to ransom for what? For a salary topping the Taoiseach? My heart bleeds. Another, I'm affected by the strike, but I'm all for industrial action. Another, maximum damage to the airline too. Bit of an own goal on the pilot's part. There could be layoffs when all of this is over. If you have a view, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087-1400-106. And as I say, after 11 o'clock, we're going to be joined by the Chief Corporate Affairs Officer for Aer Lingus, that being Donal Moriarty, and the IALPA President, Captain Mark Tighe. In a minute, we'll be looking at the other stories making the news today. Before that, the cash machine. It is News Talk. It is the Anton Savage Show. Sitting with me in studio is Ursula Savage, political commentator, Gary Murphy, professor of politics at DCU, and Valerie Cox, journalist and author. And of course, the other big story of the weekend is the fallout from the sentence, or lack of it, for Cathal Crotty. Cathal Crotty being the man who beat Natasha O'Brien unconscious in the streets in Limerick and then Snapchatted his friends to say two to put her down, two to put her out. And he got a €3,000 compensation fine to be given to Natasha O'Brien and an entirely suspended sentence. The end result of this has been protests all over Ireland yesterday and pictures on the front page of the Sunday Times today of Natasha O'Brien with a loudhailer speaking to crowds in Limerick at a demonstration against gender-based violence, and a very interesting story in the Mail about how Gardaí managed to get the Snapchat that in theory would have been deleted. And the thing that comes out in that, Ursula, is that Gardaí went to a lot of very good investigative effort and must be, one imagines, hugely disappointed with the prosecution that resulted.
I would imagine so. I would imagine it was quite sickening for them to hear that after all the work that they've done, after Cathal Crotty even pled guilty, that even after that and all the work that was done, was really dismissed, entirely dismissed. And Natasha O'Brien, when she was speaking yesterday in Limerick, she commended the work that the Gardaí had done and talked about, you know, the hours that they had put in and how good they were to her. And you know, it really is uplifting in a way, if there's anything uplifting about the stories, to hear a victim talking about how much the Gardaí have supported her through something like this. But to see an outcome like this here is absolutely disgraceful. I don't think anybody could have heard that story coming through the other day and not just have been filled with anger. And
what sort of reaction have you been hearing? What sort of discussions have you had about it?
Somewhere between anger and disgust. It's and so disheartening for any woman or for any victim of any sort of violence to think that you can do everything that you're meant to do and report the crime and even have the person plead guilty, and still €3,000 is what that person was asked to pay as compensation. And I think the attitude within the sentencing as well was very, very unusual and very unsettling, because Natasha was told that, you know, basically, Cathal Crotty had done her this big favour by pleading guilty, and she should, you know, be, you know, does she understand how good he was to do that? And I felt that was somewhere between patronising and horrific, that was kind of attitude that the judge was taking. And then to have a senior officer of the Defence Forces come in and whatever else about, now I understand that they do have to be there, that's part of their procedures, that if anything internal is going to take place afterwards, they need to be there. But to have his exemplary role and to talk about what a courteous soldier he was, to have that taken into an account in the sentencing and to wonder whether or not it's going to affect his future career, that should be entirely irrelevant. This person has pled guilty to beating a woman unconscious in the street. If you can do that and not have to face jail time, where is the line?
The other thing in that is the nature of the guilty plea, because in some of the early statements made, it gave the sense that this had been an act of a Damascene conversion or a road to Damascus conversion, and that he had seen the error of his ways. But in actual fact, it was CCTV footage, multiple eyewitnesses, and evidence from Snapchat. I mean, that's what we call bang to rights.
Bang to rights. He should have received no credit at all for the guilty plea, because he had absolutely no leg to stand on. There was no defence possible whenever that CCTV footage was shown to him. And that's when he decided to make the guilty plea. It wasn't that he felt any kind of remorse. It wasn't that he understood that he had done something wrong. I mean, we don't know if he feels any remorse. I don't think that's come through at all in anything. So it's shocking again that a guilty plea would actually be a credit to the offender in that case whenever no defence was possible. And also there's another element of the story as well. It began because Natasha and her friend called him out because he was shouting homophobic slurs in the street. So, you know, but that needs to be taken into account in the Irish Defence Force's investigation into what's happening as well, because that's entirely unacceptable too. There's just so many elements of the story that would just sort of leave you wondering what's going on. How are these kind of things acceptable in the street? And they're not. And it was, I have to say, like, Natasha O'Brien, what a fantastic spokesperson for herself, what a fantastic advocate. And it does make me wonder, though, how many other victims aren't as strong an advocate for themselves, how many of them haven't garnered that support because they haven't been able to articulate their experience in the way that it's affected them in the way that Natasha has, and she needs to be commended
for that. And presumably
as
well, what it says to other victims about taking the risk to so do, because if you have this preponderance of evidence behind you and the end result is a suspended sentence, if it is a more challenging case, God, it's a difficult message about why would you put yourself through it?
Why would you put yourself through it? 2 years she was waiting to hear that sentence. 2 years from she was attacked until she heard that he was able to walk out of court free with a €3,000 fine. In spite of the amount of evidence, in spite of a guilty plea, in spite of the laws of nature coming into play, it's absolutely a ridiculous case, and there has to be changes made. It has to be addressed in multiple ways. It needs to be addressed at a societal change in terms of the attitudes. The fact that Cathal Crotty thought it was okay to Snapchat his friends and say two to put her down, two to put her out, as if it was a great bit of crack. And it also has to be addressed that the sentencing for somebody who has pled guilty to a violent attack on the streets or anywhere for that matter could walk out. And
it's worth reiterating, a violent attack that left her with post-traumatic stress, a concussion, blackouts and a broken nose.
And she lost her job. She said herself that she lost her job because of the impact that everything had on her, that she was unable to do her job any longer. So, you know, while his career was taken into account in the sentencing, and, you know, and the judge wanted to make sure that his career wouldn't be affected, well, she lost her career over it. She lost her job.
What was your reaction to this, Valerie, when you saw the sentence?
I just thought it was absolutely unbelievable. I really couldn't believe it, because we've seen people go to jail for not paying their TV licences, and an attack of this magnitude. And, you know, we're all talking about Natasha being so brave, Natasha O'Brien. But really, as Lavinia Kerrick said on the one of the papers, the Sunday Times,
Sunday
this morning
Times,
on
yeah.
page one, she said she shouldn't have to be brave. And that is, I mean, that's the kernel of this, because this woman was in court where he was the one who was taken to court. She was giving evidence. And you rely on the judicial system to be fair, to give us justice. And in this case, it certainly didn't. I think Judge Tom O'Donnell, we don't very often object to the sentences handed down by a judge. But in this one, we haven't just got factions of society or small groups. We've got ordinary people getting up, thousands of them yesterday, and marching to support this young woman. And I think what she has called for herself is a minimum sentencing for a violent attack. And I mean, that needs to be written in. But also, I think we are just waiting for the Director of Public Prosecutions to appeal this sentence. And remember, that means that Natasha is going to be back in court having to relive all of this again. I'm not so bothered about the Defence Forces giving him a reference in court, because that is really just the process. And they weren't talking about the type of man he is who did this. They were just referring to his military record, which obviously was okay. And it's very important.
And which they are legally required to do, as
absolutely.
I understand it, whether they want to or
and
not.
And although you would query how long he'd been in the forces, whether he deserved that or not, whether he'd reached that stage. But I think it's very important that it went through all of these stages so that whatever happens next will be documented fully and we'll have the evidence there. I think basically we're going to see him dismissed. I think we're pointing towards that. They're just going through the process at the moment. Somebody reported the other day that he had been up before his commanding officer, and we'll see. You know, I think there's going to be a resolution there. But I think seriously, there has to be that appeal from the DPP. And Judge Tom O'Donnell, who's due to retire in a few days, I think this is going to haunt him.
Texts say the other message received from this case is, don't come to the aid of others who are being discriminated against, as the consequences could be detrimental for you. Another, it's disgusting that Crotty was not convicted and sent to jail. I don't want someone like him serving my country. I am embarrassed to be a male. I don't know what your reaction has been, Gary, but every conversation that I have been in has been characterised by bafflement. People coming, walking through the instances again and saying, but how, regardless of any mitigating factors, not that there are really much, how does somebody beat somebody unconscious in the street and just walk out of court?
I'm tempted to say patriarchy, which is a word I don't use too often, and I'm not quite sure I even believe in it, but certainly we have a male judge protecting the career of a male adult. And it is inexplicable. Like, as the father of daughters of Natasha O'Brien's age and a son of Cathal Crotty's age, it makes me sick to my stomach to think a boy, a young man, would attack a woman in the street in such a fashion. And then a few hours, like, so it's not in the instance. It's a few hours later, after all the pent up issues going on in that man's head are done and dusted. He then does, you know, sends this, like, it's barely believable, two to put her down. A tooter butter, like, where is the humanity in that?
Now, that's worth it because there's a fabulous piece of reporting by Debbie McCann in the Mail.
Brilliant piece, yeah.
It's worth just explaining because I assume a lot of people will be familiar with Snapchat, some won't. As I understand the reporting, and somebody might correct me, Snapchat deletes on receipt. So yeah. You receive a message and then to see. He sends this message to his friends saying, two to put her down, two to put her out. Effectively, am I great for being able to knock somebody out so efficiently, believing that Snapchat will then delete it. And luckily, the Gardaí quickly put in a request to Snapchat in the States saying, can you save that on your servers? Which they do. So it isn't that this was on his way. He did it believing that he could hide what he was saying.
Yeah, but like, where is the humanity in any young man doing that, inflicting such a brutal beating on a young woman? And as she pointed out herself, her own career has been ruined. And of course she suffered PTSD. Who wouldn't after being inflicted in such a violent attack? And I think the texter is right. We don't want people who inflict such wanton violence on a woman in our defence forces. I agree with Valerie. Certainly the commanding officer went in and he probably has been an exemplary soldier, but that doesn't make you an exemplary human being. And none of us are exemplary, but we would expect all of us to behave in a much better fashion than young Mr. Crotty, and he will live with this for the rest of his life. But so will Natasha O'Brien. That's the problem.
And also the friend that was with her that evening, because her friend was speaking yesterday at that demonstration in Limerick also. And what she was saying was, the two of them stood together and said, we did the thing you're always told to do. Yeah. We walked home in pairs because there's safety in numbers. Yeah. And if you're with somebody and if you do everything right, and that just, I think, is another one of these elements of the story that is very sickening. They were doing everything that you've always been told to do.
Yeah.
They didn't walk home alone. They didn't, you know, challenge him in any kind of, like, you know, physical way. They simply said, don't be shouting.
But I also thought it was very strange that Cathal's friends all deserted him when this happened. I mean, they were a right bunch of cowards. Mm-hmm. They should have stopped it. Yeah. There was a few of them. They could easily have stopped one man from doing something so stupid. And the other thing I thought was very worrying this morning was a statement from the Women of Honour support. They're the support group. And they said that there's a lot of people in similar positions. These are people who've been attacked by people in the defence forces. Now, they don't normally come out and make off-the-cuff statements. That's a very worrying thing to say, and I would like to know more about it.
I would also imagine that there must be people within the Defence Forces who are absolutely furious at the disrepute to which the Irish Army has been brought by this individual.
Oh, completely. I mean, and who wouldn't be? I mean, just on a, as I said earlier, like on a mere human level. But, I mean, the Defence Forces are supposed to be about discipline. First and foremost, you have discipline is drilled into anyone who signs up. My understanding is pretty self evident.
And discipline, dignity, honour, aid to the civil power, there to help the citizenry.
Here to help the citizenry, and here we have a young man betraying his oath to the state, and I think that is that kind of sums it up really.
Are we? Do you think the likelihood is? I assume it must be that the DPP is going to appeal.
I couldn't imagine anything other than that. I couldn't imagine it. Even without the uproar that's been in the media over the weekend with the case, I imagine just anybody looking at the bird back to the case.
There is a very good piece by Brenda.
Would have to do that.
Yeah, by Brenda Power in the Sunday Times as well, who chart a number of these cases where the judge says this is an appalling act, but there's always a but. And there certainly has been a but in this case and in previous cases. But it's sending out the wrong signal that you can inflict hideous violence, life-changing violence on a fellow citizen, a woman, a young woman with her whole life ahead of her. And the consequences are 3,000. I mean, it's a pittance. Worry about your career.
But you know what? I don't think that would have been the sentence if it had been a man who was attacked. Say a businessman going along and he intervenes in something like this, a homophobic comment. I don't think we'd have had a suspended sentence for that. I think whoever would perpetrate such a thing would have gone to jail.
And it is also worth saying that in her evidence, she made clear that she thought she was going to die. She was begging him to stop through it, and it kept happening. 53106, it costs 30 cents if you want to get in touch, or 087 1400 106 on WhatsApp. There is interesting political debate in the papers about the future of the Green Party, because, of course, it is, what, it's only 3 years ago-ish that there was the Green Party leadership contest involving Catherine Martin and Eamon Ryan. And not only has Eamon Ryan decided that he doesn't want to be leader anymore, but Catherine Martin has indicated that she has no desire for the position, which begs the question, well, if not them, then who? Maybe Gary might have an answer after this break. A lot of analysis today about who is going to take over the Green Party, given that nobody seems to want to take over the Green Party. Gary Murphy, Professor of Politics, may have an answer. Valerie Cox, I should say, is with us as well, as is Ursula Savage. Sorry, that makes you both sound like you're playing second fiddle to Gary. I don't mean that in any way. Just he does politics for a living. Gary, the Green Party, why does nobody want the gig?
Well, two people want the gig, and I must declare some conflict here, Anton. I know Roderick O'Gorman. I hired him to a law lectureship in DCU, and he's now on whatever they call it, political secondment in his ministerial role. He is, I would think, the sort of continuity Eamon Ryan candidate.
Who was the continuity Trevor Sargent to some degree?
Yes. And Pippa Hackett, the senator who sits at cabinet in one of these things came in about 20 odd years ago, where we have all these non-voting members of cabinet who aren't really at cabinet, a bit Schrodinger-esque. There's a great piece in the Mail about the options or the chances of people holding their seat or even getting a seat, and Pippa Hackett doesn't have a seat, and they give Pippa Hackett a 1 in 10 chance. They give Roderick 5 in 10 of holding a seat in Dublin West. But there's a really good piece by Conal Thomas in the Business Post with the big bold headline, Martin unwilling to serve. And it is quite odd that Catherine Martin, who, remember, challenged Eamon Ryan for the leadership of the party on the back of Eamon Ryan bringing the Greens to their best ever result in a Dáil election, barely a decade after they had been wiped out completely in 2011. A lot of people thought that, including me, I thought that was extremely odd. And I have to say, this is even odder that the deputy leader and the obvious choice, a person whose seat would seem to be pretty rock solid in Dublin South, although it's called something different now, Red Down, isn't it? That she hasn't served. Now, there's a couple of opinion pieces about Eamon Ryan, which are worth thinking of. Colin Murphy in the Sunday Indo, Aidan Regan in the Business Post, Alison O'Connor in the Times are all pretty generous towards him. And then Shane Ross in the Sunday Indo has a right go. And that maybe sums up the
Greens. Why do you think Catherine Martin has decided? Is she stung by the RTE experience?
It could well be. And we're going to talk about that in a minute, RTE. And it certainly has dragged on. And I don't understand why a decision hasn't been made by cabinet, unless they're just willing to run down the clock and leave it to another government. But it does seem odd that the deputy leader and the person who wanted a job 4 years ago wouldn't. No, maybe there are personal reasons. Who knows? Roderick O'Gorman, yeah, he sort of, as someone, as one of the columnists, right, he seems to have been in the Greens since he was about 12. Very committed, obviously, as is Pippa Hackett. And there's the Dublin rural issue. But maybe the existential crisis facing both potential leaders is that judging by the European election results and the local election results, they're in for a difficult Dáil election, I think.
Ursula, that's the argument that Pippa Hackett is making in an interview this morning, which is that, picking up Gary's point about sort of continuity, Eamon Ryan, that she is rural, farming background, and therefore might be able to give the appeal that we are told the Greens lost to rural agricultural Ireland.
I do see where she's coming from whenever she says that, because of her own background and her own experiences and things like that. But I do think that the issue of the perceived rural-urban divide within the Green Party and the public support for the Green Party runs a bit deeper than that. I don't think it's going to be as simple as, well, we'll put in somebody who knows about farming and then obviously everything will be fine. It'll be policy change and it'll be a job of work for the Green Party and for whatever new leader comes in to convince rural voters whether or not there has been any kind of bias. The perceived bias is there against the parts of rural Ireland. So they will have a long way to go before they do that. It's sort of like, different times whenever you say, oh, well, if there's a woman in the role that obviously appealed to women voters, people aren't this homogenous group that they're going to just say, right, well, now there's somebody like me, I better vote for them. So I do think there's that, and especially though too, like, you know, as she is a senator and she does have a slim chance of gaining a seat, I wonder how stable her leadership would be if that's the situation that she's in.
Is she part of a wider, or rather is the Greens part of a wider trend in politics? Maybe I'm wrong on this, but I'm looking at a spate of political resignations for no apparent outside reason. I mean, Leo Varadkar resigned without any men in dark suits coming to him, as was once the way. Eamon Ryan resigned again without there being knives out, daggers in the back. Rishi Sunak committed Harry Kerry by going to the party when he didn't have to. There's a whole series of these people who have decided, enough of this, I'm away. Is this a new trend in politics?
I think it could be, but I think the major parties have stolen the mantle of the Greens to some extent. You know, when we first started voting in Greens, we were thinking, OK, these are the ones who are going to save the environment, are going to worry about things. And now the other parties have stolen all of this. But I also think it's very strange. Catherine Martin's stepping down. I wouldn't be a bit surprised that Catherine Martin is going to jump ship and join one of the major parties, because she's very politically motivated. She wanted to leave four years ago.
In black and white, Gary Murphy has just swiveled his chair around with the most quizzical look I've ever seen.
And fainted. But no, seriously though, I mean, where is she going to go from here on if she's not going to be the leader? The suggestions, I mean, Pippa Hackett is not going to get it. She is an organic farmer. Her husband ran for the local council. He was co-opted after she became a senator. He got very, very few votes. She has never won an election. She's a senator, not she wasn't elected in a Dáil election. So would she be able to hold that seat? And remember, the Green Party leader, and this is pointed out to by Owen O'Malley here in the Sunday Independent this morning, the leader of the Green Party is going to be the one having to take this party into the next general election. How is she going to do that? She's never been elected herself. It's going to be a very difficult task.
Well, there again, Vanna Batchik put herself up for election a lot unsuccessfully and got the Labour Party position, also having the Dáil election, and did okay in last election, got Aon into Europe.
But she was a household name, Anton. She'd been around for decades. Pippa Hackett hasn't. And also, she's giving some very strange statements. She was asked the other day about the attack on Stonehenge when it was sprayed with all this orange...
It's just
cornflour with a bit of orange paint. Now, seriously, from the leader of the Green Party? And then she said, well, yeah, in answer to a question, if somebody did go in and dig up Newgrange, I'd be a bit worried about that, like, you know? I mean, that is not what we want to hear from a potential. But she also said the Greens have a long history of being led by middle-aged white men from Dublin. That's the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. I mean, the Greens have had so few leaders, and so have the other parties. How many women have been leaders of any parties in this country? And to call them white men and middle-aged, I mean, it's terribly sexist, isn't it?
That'll teach them, Valerie. I do think it's a bit unknown, because obviously it's a sort of a one member, one vote issue. And I think many people were surprised that Catherine Martin came so close to unseating Eamon Ryan. And who knows what the sort of grassroots think. Now, Roderick O'Gorman, though, is sort of the grassroots. He was the chairman of the party. He knows the sort of the ins and outs of green politics. And I think it would be a surprise if he didn't come through. And also, he of course sits at cabinet, and Dublin West, where he's based, has one extra seat now. So his seat, I would have given him sort of no chance until the redrawing of the boundaries. If he was to be elected as leader, I think he would have, you know, name recognition across the state when a general election is called, and would be even with a chance of holding his seat, which would seem to be paramount for a leader.
Just to give you a sense of the kind of reaction that's coming in on what we're talking about, we were speaking earlier on about Cathal Crotty and the manner in which he so violently assaulted Natasha O'Brien and walked with a suspended sentence. Text to say, lenient suspended sentences for serious assaults are a common feature of the justice system today. Headlines of violent perpetrators with 100 convictions being handed suspended sentences appear on a daily basis. Another, I am sick to hear what this so-called soldier has done, and I am a serving soldier. 53106, if you want to get in touch, or 0874-100-106. There's also a lot of talk in respect and a lot of reaction in respect of IALPA and Aer Lingus. And don't forget, we are going to be joined just after the 11 o'clock news by Captain Mark Tighe, the president of IALPA. and Donal Moriarty, who is Chief Corporate Affairs Officer in Aer Lingus. Before that, Valerie, it feels like 9.5 decades, but it is but 1 year since the RTE debacle all kicked off with the hidden payments to Ryan Tuberty and everything that followed. A lot of discussion this weekend about where now for the organisation, where is it left and where is it going? Do you want to take on the existential question?
Well, I'll try. But I think looking inside RTE at the moment, I mean, it's not a good place to be. The organisation as a whole has lost so much confidence. You know, they're just not taken seriously by a lot of people anymore. And again, of course, Catherine Martin is dealing with the issue of who's going to pay for RTE in the future. There's a lot of different views on that. So it's a very difficult one. Kevin Backhurst has taken the baton now, of course, but he's very tied in some ways. He's cutting back on recruitment, obviously. They're very, very short of staff. They don't have the same and we're not just talking about presenters or presenters who've left or anything like that, but in all strata of the organisation, they're short of staff and people are having to cover and so on. And I suppose to some extent it's the public image that he is afraid to spend money bringing in new people or paying them. I mean, I think that's probably what the exodus is about, not paying them, but also the fact that the rules and regulations have become so tight now that they're not able to earn maybe as much on the side with other projects because they're accountable for everything. They have to, I mean, there would have been people, I don't know exactly who earned what or what was reported, but possibly a lot of their salaries weren't reported for, you know, hosting big events, advertising campaigns, PR campaigns, all of that kind of thing. And that could well make people leave and maybe offers from other places as well. So with all
Well,
of
we
that
have
change,
seen Jennifer Zamparelli, we've seen the two Johnnies, we've seen Dieran Garrity,
absolutely,
all depart.
A whole list of them.
The interesting thing, Colm Hayes, who is formerly the, he used to present the breakfast show on 2FM, now presents it on Classic Hits, had previously been on FM 104. He's saying it's all gone too far. The pendulum has swung too far.
It has gone, it has gone too far. And I think he makes a very important point that he's saying that, you know, an organisation like RTE, when people are working in media, they need space to be creative. They need space to an extent, make mistakes too. And that does matter. They have to be able to try things. They have to be able to, you know, try a project that doesn't work out. Now, Toy Show the Musical was that on a massive scale and you couldn't have things like that happening again. But at the same time, in a creative industry where you're dependent on people who are going to use their talents and be creative and come up with ideas, if you're reducing morale through, you know, tight pay scales, restricting what they can do outside of work, kind of overanalyzing every single aspect of what they do, you're going to choke their ability to actually do their work. And that's not a benefit to public sector broadcasting at all either.
I tentatively put it to you that Netflix and Amazon and Disney and CNBC and NBC and CBS and all of those are exposed to the rigors of being publicly listed companies and all of the corporate governance therein. Still managed to put out some pretty good programming.
They do. But it's not public service broadcasting. It's not the same. They're not reporting on the small local stories. They're not, you know, the journalists that are going to, you know, report on, you know, Natasha's story. They're not the ones that are going to, you know, pick up on, you know, the coverage that we see in the local elections. I know other commercial stations do that too.
Thank you very much.
But of course.
Thank you.
But at the same time, there's such an aspect of it. But what I will say is when we are talking about that, TG Cahir is an excellent example of public service broadcasting that hasn't run into these issues. So I do think that perhaps there's actually something to learn there.
One of the issues, of course, that is still up for debate months into this is what's the nature of the funding going to be? Because we have seen, well, I think it's a €25 million drop in the licence fee, which of course is red flags, lights gone off, sirens, emergency has to be resolved. The question is, does it get resolved out of direct payment from the Exchequer, which we are told is Catherine Martin's view, or does it get solved by a variant of the licence fee possibly collected by revenue, which seems to be the consensus of senior members of Cabinet. If you were a betting man, Gary, which way do you think it's going to end up?
I would say it'll be some sort of tinkering with the licence fee. There's a good piece by Ian Guider in the Business Post where he says that longer term RTE requires government to finally take the hard decision, either direct funding for public service media or finding a different way of capturing households to pay. But he goes on to say it's unlikely we will see a dramatic change. And governments don't like making big dramatic changes, but RTE needs something, and certainly Valerie is right. The cutbacks, I think, are beginning to show, and it's beginning to certainly to creak. And I go back to the point I made earlier in the show, Anton. I think these decisions should have been made much earlier and much quicker and more decisively. And in the aftermath of the sort of the Tubby saga of a year ago, no, but it's been drifting on into the election could come at any stage. And I think it's been a poor day's work actually by the cabinet as a whole in not actually grasping.
But was the general thought not that they were going to kick it to touch until after a general, well, after the locals anyway?
Yeah. Well, that was the general thrust of it. And maybe we will know, where would I put my money? I think I might put my money on nothing happening until the general election, which is a sorry indictment of the cabinet in terms of a decision that has to be made. Because as you say, the licence fee, people are not very sort of sanguine about whether I'll pay it or not, and certainly some other bills come much before the licence fee. So I think serious times ahead still.
Yeah, I think also all the trouble, the ennui, if you like, about RTE has persuaded people to start looking at other stations more, listen to other programmes, particularly when Ryan Tubridy left. They'd begin to say, well, you know, what are other stations offering at this time of the day? I think it has given people a little bit of adventure having a
including this one
dial a bit. Yes, of course.
Well, on that note, Gary, thank you very much. Likewise, Valerie and Ursula. That is Gary Murphy, who is Professor of Politics at DCU. Ursula Savage, who is political commentator, and Valerie Cox, journalist and author. Loads of texts coming in respect of IALPA and Aer Lingus and the fighting words between them, because as I said, across all of the various different papers, there is coverage, including on the front of the Business Post, maximum damage. Aer Lingus pilots threaten more strike days. 15,000 passengers hit by cancellation as Taoiseach appeals for pay talks. We'll be talking to IALPA and Aer Lingus after the news.
The Anton Savage Show
with Kiri's.ie
on News Talk.